Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. Today we're going to meet the man behind the telescope. One of the world's premier telescope manufacturers is JMI, which is right here in Colorado. JMI has introduced just stunning innovations with telescopes, and I am so thrilled, honored to have in studio Jim Burr, founder of JMI Telescopes. Jim, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
It's good to be here, Bob.
It's been a long time coming, huh?
It has, yes.
You have had your ministry. It's a creation ministry, and we've had our ministry. We both look at the Lord as our creator and our God and our Savior, and we're only a few miles away. So could you introduce yourself to us?
That's amazing. Our paths have never crossed. I was aware of your programming on the radio, and it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's not a real convenient time for me to listen. Mm-hmm. Back in, I guess, 95, 96, we started doing homeschool seminars in the Denver area, Colorado Springs, and all
in astronomy.
In astronomy, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was astronomy from a biblical perspective, and we've done it in Omaha and Portland, all over the country, with telescopes. I just contact the local club and say, hey, I'm coming to town. We need telescopes for our homeschoolers. We're going to be there for 3 nights in a row. The response was unbelievable. Mm. We had the first ad we ran, we had to stop booking. We could only find a church that held 500 people.
Homeschoolers are like a sponge for science.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, we haven't done that now for about 5 years. I wonder if we did it again, if homeschoolers are getting their astronomy on the Internet, if there would be that kind of response. We took out an ad in the Czech newsletter, you know.
Well, Czech, Kevin Swanson, who's the head of Czech, the lead homeschooler in the state of Colorado, he is going to be at Colorado Right to Life's banquet September 17th with Alan Keyes, Tom Tancredo. I'll put in a personal word with him if he'd promote it. We'd promote it. Jim, that'd be exciting.
Yeah, I've been thinking about maybe doing it again. And typically, the last few years we've done it, we'd have a seminar in Fort Collins, Denver, and Colorado Springs, 3 nights back-to-back, and we'd go from one city to the other. Homeschoolers would come in from Kansas, from Nebraska, from South Dakota for 3 nights, get a motel, take their kids to the libraries, and go to do the astronomy at night, you know, and it was been very successful.
Well, JMI Telescopes, your manufacturing facility is here in Lakewood. Your customers, which are listed on your website, it's an impressive list. The Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Goddard Space Flight Center, NASA, the U.S. Naval Academy, governments and observatories around the world, universities. How is it that a Christian from Colorado ends up manufacturing and successfully selling premier telescopes all over the world?
That introduction, I wish my parents were here, could listen. My dad would enjoy that. My mother would believe it. you're gilding the lily a little bit.
Oh, I don't know. Well, how about the innovations to the telescope? The telescope goes back centuries. Yeah. Galileo is the most famous, earliest user of the telescope. The technology has been around a long time.
Yeah, well, we did sell a couple to the NASA for the Mars Science Lab to be used. The launch is being happening right now. It was originally called Mars Science Lab. Now it's called the Curiosity. And they were going to get data back from Mars on a laser rather than radio frequency, and they got a couple of our scopes for that project. But the big thing, I guess, would be the redesign of the telescope to create a binocular telescope so you can use both eyes.
And you told us this. We toured your facility, a half dozen of us, a few weeks ago. And you said, cover up one eye and walk around for a while and see what that's like. And so I did it. You know, I take instructions, directions. And when you remove that eye and look through both eyes, it's another world.
Yes. You get eye fatigue, particularly if you're looking at dim objects in a single eye telescope. It isn't long and you see less and less. The longer you look, the less you see. With both eyes, the longer you look, the more you see. Some research has been done on that in St. Mary's University in Texas. Contrast goes up 40% when you can use both eyes. And we're hearing reports that part of your brain doesn't even fire unless both eyes work. Now, these are large instruments. These are not like the binoculars you hold up when you're looking at the birds.
Right.
You
could put one in the back of your minivan and bring it out for the evening with your kids or your homeschool group or your scout troop. So they're not enormous. They're portable. They're mobile.
Two 16-inch scopes will fit inside the minivan. We have a six-inch, 8-inch, 10-inch, 12-inch, 14, 16-inch. And this has never been done before commercially. The secret was to...
Well, can we explain the problem first? To have a binocular telescope, they both have to be perfectly in alignment.
Yes.
Because the slightest bit, you manufacture it, and by the time somebody takes it out of a crate, it's not going to be in alignment.
Exactly.
It's just not going to work.
Exactly.
And so that's been the problem for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Until Jim Burr.
Well, a few people have done this in the garage, but they never did the motor drives that we do to make it work the best. David Levy, a well-known who's discovered 23 comets, he discovered the Shoemaker-Levy comet, has one. He said this is the best modification to telescope design in 401 years. and so the secret was we put a pivot on the two telescopes so you can aim them. One goes left and right with a motor, and the other one has bearings that go up and down. And so from the hand paddle, it takes 6 motors to make this work. You need interocular spacing. Your eyes, some are different. Mm-hmm. You need to focus each eye. And so it took 6 motors to make this thing work. And so one motor moves the scope left and right, one moves it up and down. And so
that was really the engineering key.
Yeah.
And to make that easy so that the end user, the astronomer or the amateur, can adjust it so that it's right on for his eyes.
One of the biggest names in the industry had told me, as I was querying him, I was just kind of picking his brain a little bit as I started working on this, and he said it's practically impossible to do. Mm. But the motors were the answer. And
well, you mentioned Shoemaker-Levy 9 was the comet that slammed into Jupiter,
yes,
right, some years ago.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've already mentioned some of your customers around the world. This has been recognized as a tremendous advance. How long now have you been selling these binocular telescopes?
The first one, I think we sold in about 2000. Scientel had what they call the Hot Products Award for 2002, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Astronomy has just come out with a new award called the Star Product Award, which just happened this month.
So it's been over a decade now with the binocular telescope, but you started manufacturing telescopes and accessories long before that.
Yes. This was so difficult that I put 12 of those in the dumpster before I got it to work right. And that's probably why nobody's ever done it before. And I have number 13. You saw number 13 there on the floor.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. Well, Heinz 57, they tried 56 times. So your model number, is there a 13 in it or no?
No, there
okay.
isn't.
All right. Yeah, and it's a beautiful piece of equipment. Also, I could picture it in a living room, in a study.
Yeah.
It not only is functional, but it's beautiful. And then it reveals the heavens, which declare the glory of God.
That's right.
So how much more beautiful can you get? And using the ability God gave us of two eyes, he did that for a reason, to enjoy that and to learn the science of it.
Right, right.
So when did you start in telescopes?
I got the first patent in 1983 with a focusing device, electric focusing device that eliminated the wiggles, worked out of my garage in Evergreen. I sold my television repair business in 86, hired two guys in 88, and we had 7 people working out of a 4-car garage in Evergreen, and then we went to Lakewood and rented some buildings, and the rest is history. And we make 1,000 different things for telescopes. Mm. I mean, I should say 1,000 part numbers.
Part numbers, and leading science equipment manufacturers around the world. Well, Meade is the largest, right?
Meade and Celestron, probably fairly equal companies.
Okay, and Meade, when you buy telescopes from Meade, they recommend that you get the case from JMI.
Yeah, that's true. We build cases, beautiful cases for foam-lined cases to store these and travel with them. And we make, like, the original product, the Focus motor, now fits 250 different telescopes. So every practical telescope on planet Earth, you could buy a focuser that will, electric focuser motor, that will eliminate the wiggle and the vibration of your telescope. And that's how we get the 1,000 parts, you see.
When we came out, again, a half dozen of us from Bob and Yurt Live, Denver Bible Church, you met us in the parking lot of your facility, and you said, before we go in, we got to look at the sun. And that was fun because, you know, we all know you can't look at the sun, but you brought out a beautiful telescope, specially designed. In fact, it's only used for viewing the sun.
Yes, that's right. And in fact, I checked it out here this morning in the parking lot just before we came in to see if it was something you'd want to come out and look at. It's very quiet again.
There was one sunspot when we looked a few weeks ago just above, say, the meridian, and you estimated the size of that spot?
About the size of the Earth.
Looked like
a blackhead on the sun.
Yeah.
We could put a million Earths in the sun. And this morning we had a couple little eruptions, but nothing, you know, maybe 10,000 miles off the surface of the sun, nothing to get excited about. The sun is really going through a very quiet period.
Cyclical. Sunspots occur in a 13-year cycle.
Yeah, 11.2-year cycle.
Okay.
And it should right now be blazing with sunspots, and it's not.
And it's
We have a 100-year record of low solar activity.
And so there are scientists who are predicting that that cycle is going to switch, and we're going to get into a very active period, which could affect us on the Earth in different ways. Global warming, the sun is what warms the Earth.
Yes.
Solar flares, these can affect our communications, our satellites.
The last cycle went out in 2003 with a bang. I mean, this thing was just blazing. And the predictions, the articles were, boy, we're really in for the next cycle being active. And then articles start coming out. What's wrong with our sun? The first one I read in Investors Daily of 08, February, saying, where's the sunspots? Are we headed for a mini ice age? August of 09, we had one sunspot. And it should be a dozen sunspots on there. And so articles continue. A new one just came out again. The solar wind is down 3%. The temperature is down 13%. The density of the solar wind is down 20%. The magnetic flux of the surface right now is approaching 1,500 Gauss, which when it gets below 1,500, we don't have any sunspots. And the new article said that the next cycle, number 25 cycle, may not even happen because when we see the graph of the magnetic surface of the sun, it's just dropping like the stock market.
And the Earth is wonderfully designed to protect us from the solar rays and the electromagnetic radiation from the sun, which could destroy life on Earth, but we're protected from that.
Yeah, that definitely isn't. Mars doesn't have that. The other planets don't have that. The moon doesn't have that protection. But it creates the Van Allen belts, which protect us from radiation from the sun. And the problem going to Mars is we can't protect our astronauts. There's about five, six different ways you could protect them. If you could put them in the bottom of a swimming pool, if you could put lead around them, if you could charge them with a very high voltage, if you could put a magnetic field around them, you could protect them. The latest one, there's two latest ones, and one was, well, if we can maybe create a pill that would make you immune to the solar radiation, you wouldn't get cancer. But the newest one is, hey, we need to find people who want to be pioneers, 65 years and older, who will go to
Mars. Who don't mind dying.
Who will go to Mars and never come back. It's going to be a two-year trip, round trip. Mars comes around every 2 years, so it'd be a 2-year exposure to radiation from the sun, you know.
The evidence that God has created us and given us such a paradise on Earth, but then man's sin and rebellion, we've begun to damage that paradise. So there's sickness, disease, and death. But the design of the solar system, I recall that atheists, cosmologists would say, well, the sun is a typical sun, and there's millions of suns where you could have planets and life around them. And in the refereed scientific journals, as late as the last 6 weeks, there are articles coming out saying, you know what? Maybe we jumped the gun on that because we are not finding suns as wonderfully stable as our sun. And the chance of life evolving on other planets does not appear to be as certain as we originally thought.
You know, we've discovered probably about 1,000 planets now. You look at this picture and you say, like, there's a little pin prick on that, and there's that planet, you know, and oh, it's located just right, and maybe it's got water and all this speculation. The problem is, if you look at our sun, it is, you know, it's like a million Earths would fit inside, and typically, for the homeschoolers, we would take a beach ball and represent the sun, a 3-foot beach ball. The Earth becomes the size of a pea, you know. And so the sun has all this intensity, this brightness, and the planets have only their reflective light. And so that's why it makes it so difficult to actually image any of these. But, you know, through our process of building telescopes and studying astronomy, I've had a ministry going, and we travel all over, and I have a daily TV program called The Hubble, The Bible, The Big Bang.
I've been hoping we could talk about your TV program. I've gotten to see some of it now, and it's fascinating. You have upcoming shows. Could we talk about what's coming up on your program?
You can see it on the internet. You have to watch it when it's broadcast. It's on tonight, Friday night at, I think it's about 7 o'clock or maybe it's 8. If you go to LLBN, Loma Linda Broadcasting, LLBN TV, and then you will find the schedule there, Astronomy, The Hubble, The Bible, The Big Bang. I don't know what programs they're playing right at the moment. There are 32 programs, and they run the same one all week, and then next week they'll flip. Because it's sometime in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And I just booked a new series. We're going to start recording this 13-week series this fall. And a lot of exciting stuff. You know, when you look at the Hubble, the Bible, the Big Bang. One of my new programs is the sun. I wish somebody could explain how the sun formed and any, you know, thing that makes sense.
Mm.
They can't explain how this sun formed. The silent and bare, this is Max, noted astrophysicist, who says we have 100 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy, and we have 100 billion galaxies. The silent embarrassment to astrophysicists is they cannot tell you how one sun formed.
How not one star formed. The standard model for the formation of a star begins with the star already forming. They say, well, a star will supernova, and it will blow up, and then the elements that were made in the supernova collect to form a star. They sort of start with the second generation. Okay, how did the first generation start?
Right.
So to form a star, just like to form a baby goat, you start with a goat. To form a star, they start with stars, which sort of is no fair. But then also, Isaac Newton disagreed with, if I recall, Descartes, because Descartes was saying, well, there'd be a gas cloud, a nebula, and it would be swirling, and it would form into the sun and the planets. And Isaac Newton, considered the greatest scientist ever, he said, you know what? No, that wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. And today we know, for example, the law of the conservation of angular momentum, that if that were true, the sun is so massive, it would have almost all the spin of the solar system, almost all of it, and the planets would have about 2%.
Yes.
But that's not the case.
It's the reverse of what they actually have. A skater who pulls in their arms and legs, they've clocked at 250 miles an hour.
Oh, my.
If you started
an ice skater.
Yes, an ice skater. And if you started with this cloud, let's say 12 trillion miles across, this hydrogen gas collapsing and rotating,
It's gradually collapsing as it was spinning.
Yeah, and it has to, in the coldness of space, in the vacuum of space, it has to heat, reach 50 million degrees to get to ignite the sun, to get those hydrogen atoms to fuse together to form helium. It should be spinning like the blades on a jet engine.
Yeah, right.
You know?
The sun should be spinning so wildly rapidly, but instead the sun, relatively speaking, is almost not spinning.
You can't even see it move. You'd have to drive a stake in the ground to see it move. It takes 28 days for the sun to move. In other words, the Earth is 28 times faster, you see, than the sun is. So,
yeah.
Also, in the coldness of space at 400 some below zero, in the vacuum of space, supposedly gas in a vacuum is going to condense under the gravity and reach this temperature of 50 million degrees?
Well, gravity is called the weak force because,
yes,
like, let's say you have nails on a table and you pick a magnet up above them. The electromagnetic force will pull the nails right off the table up to the magnet. Here's the whole Earth with the gravity of the whole Earth, and the gravity can't keep the nails down on the table. So as supposedly gravity is going to collect all these gas molecules, but as the pressure and temperature increases, that temperature and pressure is going to be a way greater force than gravity. That cloud is not going to happen in space. Gas dissipates.
And it would stop collapsing. Centrifugal force would cause it to fly apart. It could never collapse to the point that would reach that temperature, and it should be going much faster. You know, Lawrence Livermore University is, if you Google NIF, National Ignition Facility, they have a recipe for making a sun.
Oh.
And they're trying to make a sun out there. I think I showed you that when you came down for the interview. They take 192 lasers, they amplify them a quadrillion times, and focus them on something the size of the head of a match.
Mm.
To create a sun here because it would solve our energy problems. It's pollution-free. It could run on seawater. The problem is they don't want to melt California off the map. They fire those 192 lasers that they've heated at 50 million degrees or more for 20 billionths of a second. They can only fire them for 20 billionths of a second. Then they wait 8 hours. And this has been a process going on. They still got 40, 50 years trying to create a sun. But that 20 billionths of a second, that flash, is so tiny, so small. If you were going to accumulate one full second.
A full second of that much energy.
Yeah. It would take you 3,000 years flashing it and waiting 8 hours. Three times a day, if you flash it 20 billionths of a second, three times a day, it would take you 3,000 years to accumulate one full second of on time.
Oh, my.
In that flash, there is so much energy, you can't believe it. There is enough energy in that instant to power planet Earth. Every light bulb and motor on planet Earth, 500 times over. Every requirement of the power grid on Earth, 500 times in that flash.
Right.
But it's really short.
Yeah.
Your air conditioner would never get cooled down, you know?
Right.
It's going to take 3,000 years just for 1 second. Bob, I hold up my lectures. I love this. I hold up this match. You see, what man has achieved. This is the achievement of man with billions of dollars, our smartest scientists, physicists, mathematicians, chemists. We have heated the head of a match to the temperature of the core of the sun for 20 billionths of a second. The Bible says, God says, I am the Lord, that is my name. I will not share my glory with another. How glorious is that sun you look at out there?
Wow.
And here's the glory of man, ahead of a match, the temperature of the core of the sun. Here's the glory of God.
And Jim, if you go out, today looks like a beautiful day here in Colorado. If you go out and it's a hot day and you step under the shade of a tree, God created trees for our enjoyment. And without trees, we wouldn't have life as we know it. They're so valuable. And you stand under the tree and you feel cool and there's a light breeze and you think the sun is 93 million miles away and it does such a tremendous job at providing for billions of people the amount of light and energy and warmth that we need to live. Absolutely. And a little bit closer and a little bit further away and life would not exist as we know it.
There are hundreds of parameters, things about the Earth that make it. We're in the Goldilocks zone, perfect for life. There's no other planet in our solar system where you would want to live or could live.
Yeah. Well, Stephen Hawking said we should go to the moon or Mars to escape global warming.
Yeah.
I thought he never checked the temperature of the moon or Mars. Forget about oxygen and liquid water. I mean, why didn't he say we should go to Antarctica? Why or Siberia? Why the moon? So, yeah, and the moon is perfect, too. It gives us the tides. It helps with the circulation of the ocean's waters to oxygenate them for life and plankton in the sea. And it's about 400 times smaller than the sun in diameter, but it's also 400 times closer, so it gives us a perfect eclipse of the sun so we could see the corona.
Right.
And that has opened up the understanding of the universe to our scientists.
Yes. The moon is great. It serves a real purpose, but you wouldn't want to live there because it doesn't have a magnetic field. The lunar soil sticks to everything. It gets in your, they can't clear their face mask off. It's static. It sticks there and it gets in the bearings and it gets in the Gore-Tex and it's a real pain. In fact, there's a company right here in Denver that is making moon dirt, moon gravel for testing, you know. Mm. But the other thing about the, you think about the Goldilocks zone, you think about our Earth. And you think about if it was rotating instead of 24 hours, if it took 48 hours to rotate, what would happen? You would fry to death in the heat.
We'd get too hot.
And too cold.
And too cold.
And if it was rotating faster, it would never reach enough temperature. You just, you know, the tilt of the Earth, the reflectivity of the Earth, the magnetic field of the Earth, the moon, which aerates the ocean, our position in the solar system, position in the galaxy. There are, I think Chuck Misler says, 100 parameters that make it look like, it's called the anthropic principle, make it look like it was designed for us. And the evolutionists go, you know, this is really amazing. It really looks like it was designed for us.
Right.
But we know it all evolved, right?
Yeah. So what led you to first recognize God as our creator and then Jesus Christ as our savior?
Well, I was raised in a Christian home, and I think the seed that got planted when I was a little kid sitting in camp meeting, and a Philip Knox came and talked about the heavens and the stars. And, you know, that was what got me going on this. And I'll tell you, as I got to studying it, and I didn't study it until later in life, actually, and but seeing this incredible universe, I mean, there is no way. The evidence is there. There is just no way that this just happened.
Well, when they look at the moon, the reason there are five different theories on how the moon formed
right.
is because nobody could explain it. And if they could explain it, there wouldn't be five theories. And so if they can't tell us how the moon formed, which is our closest neighbor, and they can't tell us how the sun formed and why it's not spinning, and now the discoveries of all these exoplanets are shredding their theory of the formation of a solar system because they got gas giants in close to a sun, which is not supposed to happen. So really, the public has been oversold on the confidence of the godless cosmology of how this all comes to be without God.
Yeah, I collect these quotations from all these famous, well-known scientists, you know, where they'll tell you, if the latest discovery is true, we know less than nothing, you know.
Right.
You know, Bob, I was going to maybe mention something here as we're getting close to the end of the program. In America, everybody's Christian. Everybody's going to heaven. But I don't think everybody's going to heaven. When we look up there and we see that last galaxy, we're talking 12 billion light years away. Psalms, you know, says that as high as the heavens are above the earth, that's how great God's mercy is towards them that fear him. As far as the east is from the west, How far can you comprehend that last galaxy? Can you comprehend how far the east is from the west?
No.
We can't comprehend that. That's how far he's removed our transgressions from us. You know, and some Christians, that's all they want to hear is grace. But the Bible does tell us how to live, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it says your parents probably told you walk the straight and narrow.
Right.
You see, the Bible does say straight is the gate and narrow is the way, and few there be that find it. So we need the grace of God. I mean, it's unbelievable grace that we can't comprehend. But also he does have instructions how we should walk.
That's absolutely right. And today, a Christian family raising kids in our culture, their kids, unless they seek the Lord and study his word and fellowship at a strong Bible church, their kids are going to believe that homosexuality is okay, lesbian, bisexuality, gay marriage, abortion. They're going to believe evolution, very likely, if they go to public schools.
Right.
And eventually they'll reject the faith of their mother and father.
Right.
God offers us eternal life, but he does so that we could live for him, not that we could wallow in sin in the filth of the world.
That's right.
That's right. You mentioned homeschooling and Kevin Swanson. He's going to be at the Colorado Right to Life Banquet. I'd like to give that a second plug. September 17th, Alan Keyes, Ambassador Alan Keyes, appointed by Ronald Reagan to work at the UN, he's going to be here. Tom Tancredo, who ran for president, ran for governor, he's going to be here, and Kevin Swanson at the banquet Saturday, September 17th. I'll be there, Lord willing. We plan to be there. So please, come on out to that. And how about your website, Jim?
It's heavensdeclare.org. And it has my speaking schedule on it. It has a link to NASA Picture of the Day. I don't really have any YouTube clips on there, I guess.
Yeah. Well, heavensdeclare.org. I'm right here right now. Astronomy Picture of the Day. And your TV show, if somebody wants to tune in, you said that we can do that.
Just go to LLBN TV, and you'll find the schedule there, and you have to watch it when it's streaming, when it's live, you know.
And we will put a link to that on our show summary for today's program.
It's on Saturday afternoon at 3, Sunday morning at 10:30. It's on Wednesday night, and then sometimes the middle of the night, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Friday night it's on 7 or 8, I forget, Wednesday night.
All right.
About the same.
Well, Jim Burr, it's an honor to have you in studio, and it was a long time coming.
Yeah, well, it's fun to be here.
So thank you so much. What a joy. And this has been Real Science Friday. You can find us online at realsciencefriday.com or go to the Bob and Yurt Live website, kgov.com, and we've got a wonderful science department in our store, so check it out.